went to a barracks from British troops in the Falkland War, a floating jail off the Bronx, and temporary housing for VW factory workers in Germany have in common? Well, according to our next guest, Ian Kumakawa, they have all inhabited one Swedish barge, to be exact, built in 1979. Now, the barge has so many names, the author simply calls it the vessel. The book is called Empty Vessel, The Story of the Global Economy in One Barge. Ian Kumakawa is a historian at the Center for History and Economics at Harvard University. He is the author of the book, The First Serious Optimist. And again, the new book is Empty Vessel, and it's a pleasure to welcome Ian Kumakawa to the roundtable this morning. Ian, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a delight to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what brought you to this story, to want to tell it in this particular way?
Well, this is a story of a single barge, and through the barge, the story of the global offshore, really, over the last five decades. And I came to it, really, in totally accidental way. It was during the pandemic. My wife is a public defender, and we were living in New York, and my wife had clients who were incarcerated on what was then called the boat, which was the last prison ship that was located in the United States, and it only closed in 2024. And I just became completely fascinated with the idea that New York still had a prison ship. I'm, by training, a historian of the British Empire, and so it immediately called to mind the prison hulks that were such a feature of British imperial life in the 18th and 19th centuries. And so I just kept digging about these prison barges, first the one that was currently there in New York, and then some of the barges that it replaced. And one in particular really jumped out. This was a barge that was moored off of Lower Manhattan in the 80s and 90s, and it just had the most fascinating history. It was basically a flat-bottomed barge with five levels of modified shipping containers on top, and the city was using it to incarcerate people. It was using it as a jail. But before that, it had been meant for housing for offshore oil workers in the North Sea, in Sweden and the United Kingdom, for as a barracks for British troops in the Falkland Islands, for Volkswagen workers who were staying in West Germany. It was used after its time in New York as a prison in the United Kingdom and ended up in Nigeria, where it was put to service housing offshore oil workers again. And it was just a fascinating story, and I, as I learned more and more about it, I just kept pulling on this thread that just kept giving.
When did you, was this from the beginning that you realized that this could also tell a story, and that what this ship had gone through characterizes global trade itself?
Not at the very beginning. At the very beginning, I was absolutely taken just with the idea that there was this ship that was housing incarcerated people, that it was a jail. And then the story of it coming to represent these big changes in the global economic sphere really emerged as I researched it. You know, one of the things that's really striking about it is that it is built out of these modified shipping containers. So like the boxes that carry so much of the trade that we depend on around the world, this ship, too, was a creature of that global world. And then also at the same time, I came to realize that the ship's story really spoke to all sorts of different facets of the offshore world itself. And obviously, it's a ship, and ships are by nature offshore. But it also belonged to a slightly more abstract offshore world. It was registered in all sorts of Caribbean tax havens, flew a whole bunch of different flags of convenience. It was subject to international arbitration. It, of course, serviced the offshore oil industry, but it also was owned by all of these different companies that themselves were taking advantage of offshore registries. So in a very literal way, but in a more abstract way, it provided a kind of amazing opportunity to talk about the offshore world itself.
The name of the book is Empty Vessel, but you refer to this ship many times as a chameleon.
Yes, that's right. It changes its meaning. It changes its status depending on the kinds of people that it is housing. It's brought from context to context. One of the really important things about this ship is that it doesn't have its own motor. So it's physically lifted or towed into these new contexts. And when it appears in these new contexts, it takes on new social meanings. So, you know, its meaning in New York as a jail is totally different from how it's understood in, for instance, the Falkland Islands, when it's understood as a barracks for British troops.
And at what point did it become a shipping vessel?
Well, it was constructed in 1979 in Sweden. It's never been a shipping vessel per se, in that it's never contained goods that are meant to be transported by it from one place to another. Instead, it was always meant to contain people. Not to transport people, but to contain people in really any part of the world. Offshore, when it is working in the offshore oil industry, in the Falklands, in Nigeria, as I said, and in Germany. So it moves from place to place, and then once it's there, it serves as accommodation for workers or for prisoners or for soldiers.
So this idea of what we know about containerized shipping came out of that time, roughly, right? And so where does this ship fit into that line?
So containerized shipping emerges really in the 50s, 60s, and takes off in the late 60s, early 70s. It's meant, the beauty of containerization is that goods, any sort of good, no matter the shape or size, can be put into standardized boxes. And those boxes then are much easier to transport, but especially to load and unload off of especially built container ships. That standardization is super important for the global economy in the mid-late 20th century. It's what allows the real takeoff of global trade in many ways, the technological basis, if you will, of that big takeoff. And what's interesting about the vessel is that it, too, is dependent on that standardization. It's why it's able to be constructed as cheaply as it is. And the fact that these standardized containers fitted out with certain kinds of creature comforts for human habitation are so standardized, is what allows it to move from between all of these different contexts and accommodate so many different kinds of people.
So more on that, but I mean, this is hardly a luxury ship, and yet it does have a squash court, a library, a swimming pool, and a couple bars.
Yeah. At various points, it does have all of those things. It also has a basketball court on its roof that's installed when it's in New York as a jail. And those sorts of creature comforts made a lot of sense when it was being built for offshore oil workers. This was a tough job, and the people who were the customers who were going to be leasing this barge wanted to have certain creature comforts to attract people to that job. Now, when it gets to New York and to Portland, England, where it's serving as a jail and a prison, those creature comforts are seen as far too luxurious, especially by the authorities who are in charge of running the ship. And in particular, one thing that really jumped out to me is when it gets to New York, administrators in New York are really exercised about these quote unquote, luxury European shower heads that are in each one of these cabins. And so, you know, depending on who is staying on the vessel, the facilities have to either be changed or even deinstalled.
One of the things I found interesting, and I'm hoping you can talk about, I mean, you mentioned the military operation in the Falklands, but there is what is fascinating about the history is it goes back and forth from the private sector into public service, and that is there's a lot of back and forth in that regard of whether it be. Whether it be British or New York or even Poland.
That's right. It goes back and forth between the public and private sector. It's, for most of its existence, owned by private firms, but authorities, municipal and national, find great use for using the vessel. Now, the vessel is something that's really demanded in a crisis. Now, the reason that the British use the vessel as a housing for soldiers in the Falklands is that after the Falkland War, the British government has really the obligation of securing the Falkland Islands from reinvasion from the Argentinians. And to do so, they have to station thousands of people, thousands of soldiers and airmen on the islands. But how are you going to do that? It's really hard to build new accommodation on, you know, a piece of land that's 8,000 miles from home, especially in the middle of winter. And so it is into that crisis of demand that the vessel steps. And similarly, in New York, the reason that authorities are so keen to have a vessel in the city is that this is in the midst of the war on drugs. The arrest rate is surging. Prisons and jails in the city and the state are very, very crowded. There's a court order to reduce the overcrowding in New York City jails. But how are you going to do that? It's really hard to open up a new jail facility. It's hard to change the use of an existing building in New York City to serve as a jail because of zoning and land use rules. And so there's this crisis, and into this crisis comes the ship that is able to accommodate people literally offshore and thereby avoid some of the zoning regulations that were tying New York City authorities' hands. So it's in these crisis moments that the vessel really becomes useful. And, of course, governments are often the institutions that are responding in those times of crisis.
Ian Kumagawa is the author of Empty Vessel, the story of the global economy in one barge. Give us a sense of how you look at this ship now and what it tells us about our current state of trade and globalism.
Yeah. So one of the implications that I had just talked about is that in times of crisis, authorities are often turned to offshore institutions. Certainly, we can see this happening now with the Trump administration's turn to offshoring offshore spaces, whether Guantanamo Bay or El Salvador, in its deportation program. I also think that in this time of economic uncertainty, the offshore becomes ever more important. Not only in times of economic uncertainty do wealthy individuals and companies want to park assets in safe jurisdictions and in relatively safe havens, which may be offshore, but also companies are looking to think about how to use offshore spaces for trade itself. So in the lead up to so-called Liberation Day, and certainly in the month since, there has been a ton of interest in these foreign trade zones that basically are outside, very much on U.S. soil, but outside U.S. tax jurisdiction. They're outside of tariff restrictions. And there's been a surge of interest in this as people are trying to insulate themselves from potential tariffs. And really, the vessel that I describe over the course of this book, not only is it itself offshore, but it ends up in one of these offshore free trade zones in Nigeria. So this whole hidden world of the offshore, I think, is going to become ever more important in the coming months and years.
And this the vessel goes on, right? I mean, the story of this particular ship is not over.
That's right. It is still afloat. It is currently in Nigeria, in one of these free zones. It's the Onne oil and gas free zone. But at the moment, it is very much covered in mold. And so it may be in its final act. But it's important not to write off the ship too easily, because there are plenty of episodes in its life that are really hard to predict, and it may well be demanded by some other crisis that we have yet to encounter.
And I don't know, it just seems, and this is an easy thing to say, but in the end, even if it is in its final act, they got their money's worth out of it, didn't they?
The vessel has been very profitable for its owners because it is often demanded in the midst of a crisis. States and cities are very much willing to pay their way to solve those crises. And so for the private owners of the vessel, it has been pretty lucrative, yeah.
The name of the book is Empty Vessel, The Story of the Global Economy in One Barge. The book is published by Knopf. Ian Kumakawa, I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Empty Vessel, The Story of the Global Economy in One Barge. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.